Everyone, this is Pam, and you're listening to a new episode of the podcast, Women Who Stutter Our Stories. You can find that on the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, at stutterrockstar.com, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts from. Today, as always, I am excited to welcome a new guest to the stage who's going to share parts of her amazing story. So I'd like to say hello to Stacy. Hey, Stacy, how are you today?
Hi, Pam. I'm doing great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Really excited to have you as a guest. So to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
Sure. So my name is Stacy. I live in San Jose, California. I have twins that are 17 years old, boy, girl twins. They're graduating high school in about 2.5 months. So that's exciting and nervous. I work full time as an HR generalist out here. What else? Oh, and we also have a cat named Esky, who you probably hear. She's crying right now, being very, very vocal. So, and what else keeps me busy? I do a lot of volunteer work. I volunteer at their school, and I also volunteer at our local food bank. I've been volunteering there since the beginning of COVID. So I actually, next week will be my 4-year anniversary volunteering at the food bank.
Wow.
So, yeah, pretty exciting, actually.
That is really exciting because oftentimes you hear of people's volunteerism, like just during like a certain, you know, phase, or if there's like a, you know, city or statewide crisis going on. So most people don't sustain volunteerism. So you going into 4 years, that's amazing.
You know, it started off as I had been laid off my job in January of 2020. So I was looking mm-hmm. for work. I had a lot of time on my hands. Kids were, you know, I should say COVID had just started, I guess we can say, and I needed something to do because I was just home looking for work. And I found them and went and worked my first shift. And one shift turned into, gosh, I don't know how many now, probably like 500 shifts. I have no idea. Over 1,000 hours. And it's just turned into my passion, I guess you can say. With everything going on here and, you know, everywhere, all around the world, COVID-wise, you know, people were losing jobs, and there was just so much going on, and learning about and realizing how hunger was so real and real in all of our backyards. And, you know, it could be me, it could be someone I know, it could be someone that you know, and you know, numbers have gone up and down, but currently we're feeding, you know, 500,000 people a month in two counties where I live, just, you know, nearby, and numbers are high again. So it's just become something that I love, and I keep doing because it's great, and we're feeding our community.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
And you said, you're approaching your 4-year anniversary with that. Do you actually meet individuals that are that are receiving food, or are you just like a bagger, an inventory person? Tell me a little bit about what your role is.
Sure. That's a great question, actually. So when I started as a community volunteer, I would go into the food bank, and we were bagging up food, boxing up food, getting it ready. Now, keep in mind, prior to COVID, numbers were low, which was good. And then having this huge influx of need came literally overnight with everything happening in our, world. So I went from working at the food bank, bagging up, boxing up, sorting produce. after I did that for a few months, I decided I wanted to become what is called a team leader, where I led groups in the food bank, in just led projects. So I wanted to kind of take on that responsibility of doing that. I just thought it just seemed natural for me. And I can get back to that later. But after 6 months of working inside the food bank, I went and worked at a distribution site, which is where I saw the other side of where everything goes. And it was important to me, since I had worked inside for 6 months, I wanted to see the other side and see all the people. So I worked at a distribution site for, I think, also about 6 to 9 months, and got to meet all of these wonderful people. And they brought their dogs, and they brought their babies in the cars, and we got to see them and just chat with them. And they were so thankful to us for just something simple, but we all understand, what it's, or that, times were very tough, and not everyone has food when they walk out into their kitchen every day. So yes, I have seen both sides. I've seen inside and I've seen outside. Which was, after every shift I've ever worked in 4 years, I leave with a full heart, just knowing whatever work we did, whether it was inside, bagging it, boxing it, sorting it, or giving it out, you leave with a full heart, knowing that you did something good on that day. So,
Yeah, knowing that you made a difference. That's great.
Thank you.
Did stuttering come into play at all with like people that, other volunteers or with some of the people on the receiving end?
Sure. And I, as I just said, I would get back to being a team leader. So I had worked with other team leaders and thought that seemed like a natural thing for me to move into that role. Granted, it's all still volunteer, but you just take on that, just kind of a leader role of leading groups and running the projects, and things like that. So I knew at some point, I was going to have to get up in front of the groups and, welcome them in, explain the projects, answer questions, which, people generally had. And I will admit, when I knew that was coming, I knew I wanted to do it, but I knew there was going to be that time where I was going to have to get in front of that group and do that. We don't have anything scripted. We would welcome people in. Here's what we're going to work on today. We're going to sort through apples and, box up all of these items into this box, and went through things. And I would watch others do it. I would maybe kind of jump in at first, just, you know, kind of creep into it, not jump in full, you know, full on.
Yeah, I get that.
And, you know, honestly, I think over time, as I did these intros and as I practiced it, just doing it once a week, twice a week, I got pretty good at it. And honestly, when I do the intros now, I'm pretty fluent doing it just because I've done them so many times. I actually, when we have several of us leading different projects, like if there's, you know, two of us leading one project, I'll volunteer to actually do the little intro because it's helped me become more fluent, but I never stepped away from it. That was the thing, is when I knew I wanted to do that, it was scary, but I just did it. And like I said, over the last probably 3 years or so as a team leader, I just practiced it a lot and I've become pretty fluent. And when I'm not, I just stutter on something and I just keep going. Just so definitely was there as fear. I don't know what to call it, really fear, but it was definitely there, but I was up for that challenge, I guess, because I knew this was something I was really going to enjoy doing.
Yeah, and you mentioned that your fluency really improved by doing all that, but so did your confidence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because like most people who stutter do not dive in to making presentations, even if they're only for 3 or 4 minutes. So, you know, just the fact that you want it to and kept at it, like, you know, that's wonderful for both fluency and confidence and self-esteem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just became, like I said, when I started, I never anticipated I would still be there after all this time. I mean, it just became something that was needed in our community. I had free time because I was not working. So, and even when I was spending time looking for jobs, there was just nothing. I mean, COVID was just shutting down hiring and no openings. So I was volunteering 2, 3, 4 shifts every week. And then as I got to be pretty comfortable with it, I'm like, you know, I want to lead. I want to move on here. And maybe that'll help me get a job one day. Maybe they'll see that I volunteered here, you know, for all this time and I was dedicated to doing this. And it just, like I said, it just became my passion these last 4 years. I mean, hunger is just, no one wants to go hungry. And like I said, it could be you, it could be me, it could be neighbors of ours, it could be family members, it could be friends of ours, we don't know. And it's just, it's just become that thing. And I just kind of, maybe I just knew this was something I wanted to keep doing. And my next step was to take on this role, though fearful of me having to get into, you know, get in front of groups of 25 or 30 people, probably most, but yeah, I was up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I still am 4 years later.
And you mentioned that thinking like, maybe if I, you know, keep on doing this and I, you know, become a team leader, that it might help me eventually with, you know, looking for paid employment. Did it? Do you think that it helped lead you into paid employment?
Let me see. Thinking back, in the first couple of jobs were like more contract, short-term roles. I lost my job January of 2020. The first job I got after that was 16 months later. So I was unemployed 16 months. First job was May of 21. It was just like a short-term 1 month job. So, and then that led into the next, you know, short-term 3 months. I mean, I was happy to have any job at that point. I mean, I was like working income, great. You know, just, it's going to bump me to the next job. So, I would always mention it. And I think I actually put it in my cover letter since that's what I had been doing for the last, you know, year and a half or so, hadn't been working, you know, so what have you been doing? Well, I've been looking for work. I've been looking for work, but COVID kind of nixed all that. So I've been volunteering and this is what I've been doing. And it's, you know, hopefully people looked at that as something positive. I didn't just sit at home on my butt doing nothing. I got out there and I fed people. I mean, as, you know, best as I could is. So I definitely put it in my cover letter. I would mention it in the interviews just to say, you know, here's what I've been up to. You know, COVID nixed all this stuff, but I've been volunteering at this food bank and it's so, it makes you feel so good. And we're doing such good work and it's become my new passion. And I definitely bring it up, or I say I've brought it up in every interview that I've had since then. At one company where I worked for about 6 months, I brought a group of my colleagues there to do a shift. So that was really neat. Since I did talk it up a lot, and companies are very into giving back and doing volunteer work a lot of the time, I would say, I have a connection. And they'd be like, oh, we're on. I would go over and they'd be like, we would love to get a group to go and box food or whatever we're, you know. So I set that up at one of my jobs and I brought a whole group over. So, I mean, I definitely looked at it as, you know, obviously something positive. Hope that they would also, knowing that, you know, since work was not plentiful at the time, it just, I was doing something and I was doing something good. So.
Yeah. Now you said that you're presently working as a HR generalist. Mm-hmm. What is that exactly?
So an HR generalist is basically, you know, we are the, in most jobs, the first person after the interview. You know, sometimes I'm involved in the interviews, but who you meet once you're hired on at your job. So, sometimes I'm in on the interviews, but if not, after someone is hired, they would come in on their first day and meet with me. And we would go over all of that new hire paperwork, gotcha. Payroll stuff, benefits information for your job, go through the I-9, do all of that type of, new hire paperwork, where I would, of course, have to do a lot of speaking as well. So sometimes that was also a little bit challenging. But, you know, it's so funny. I get into this, you know, I've been doing HR for over 20 years. And you'd think, you know, what job, you know, other than someone who speaks publicly would have to get up and talk more than someone who does HR. And that's me. Mm. So that's like on the, you know, early end, you know, hiring, benefits, things like that. Then, giving presentations on like safety, we would do like safety presentations and, open and enrollment meetings over the, benefit plans. If we were going to, change, you know, health, plans, I would have to get up and, you know, talk about, here's what we have now. Here's what we're going to, you know, switch to, go over, answer all the questions. and then on the back end, when someone is, terminated or, you know, quits, either way, then they have to come in and see me at the end for all of the, you know, end of the job paperwork, final check and all of that. So I wear lots and lots of hats in my job, you know, HR. Yeah, exactly. I always say I always say, not that you can see this, I wear lots of hats in my job. I love what I do, and doing what I do, I think early on in my career, I would shy away from or somehow get out of having to do that presentation or give that speech or but as I've gotten older and wiser, I kind of step up and say, this is what I do. I've been doing it, like I said, over 20 years, and I love what I do. I'm good at it. But there are just challenges, and you just have to roll with it. So I've stuck it out.
What industry are you in?
So right now I work in education. I work for a small educational company that hires teachers who work with blind students.
Oh,
very interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're about 35 employees, we're branching out in addition to working with blind and visually impaired. We're also branching out into working with deaf and hard of hearing also. so it's a very new industry for me. I have worked in education before, but like worked at schools, just work, doing HR at a school, at a regular, middle school, high school. I've worked in tech, I've worked in schools, I've worked in hospitals, I've worked in manufacturing. HR is one of those things that you can literally do anywhere. You can pick it up and you just take it. It's like, I can do it in any, industry. So you just have to learn how they do it there.
Right.
HR doesn't change much. You just have to learn how they do it there. So that's really the only change. So I've worked in lots of industries, and
yeah,
this one right now is really interesting. Actually, I've learned a lot.
It sounds like it's very, I never can say this word correctly, niche, or,
niche.
Like,
niche is good. Yeah.
But it's, it's got such a validating purpose to it that, I would love to be able to say that I make that kind of a difference in people's lives, because, you can't just place any person working with visually impaired people. You have to find the right fit, right?
Right. Absolutely. And working in this industry with disabled, getting back to that kind of leads back to the stuttering. I've always kind of asked myself, is stuttering a disability? I always wondered, I can see, I can hear, is it really a disability? And I still, even to this day, question whether it is. On forms that I have to fill out, they always ask if you have a disability. Mm-hmm. And I still, even to this day, after all these years, I think about it. And I said, well, now I'm working with teachers who work with blind individuals, hearing impaired individuals. And, it's been very eye-opening, and just, like I said, very interesting. I will admit I'm still a bit of a covert stutterer. Through certain jobs, I've said things. Through other jobs, I haven't, or I've just been more fluent for whatever it's worth. In my current job, we, since we work with disabled people, and we have to deal with accommodations for even some of our teachers. Some of our teachers are deaf. So, yeah. So, like, you know, I haven't said anything in my current role yet.
Okay.
I have not. I've been there about 6 months. So, but being the industry that I work in, and all, just how everything's kind of falling out, I think, you know, this is the one place where I should feel comfortable saying, just saying something because of the industry that I work in right now. So
why do you think that you shy away from referring to stuttering as disability?
I don't know. That's a very interesting question. Maybe because, like, when you complete forms, when you're hired, and they always ask, do you have a disability? And we've all filled those forms out at, you know, jobs that we've all had over the years. And I read that list. It's the list that they have. And it's like, it's got like 30 different things on it. And stuttering is not one of them.
Right.
Ironically, it's not.
Right.
So I always wonder, do I say I have a disability because it's not on the list? Or do I just say no? And for years, I just left it blank. I would say no, I don't. And I don't know, over time, and I've read articles and things about it and being part of our group. And I don't know. And I think recently, when I was either applying for four jobs before getting this one, I think I've been saying yes, because I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe just over years, being older, like I said, maybe a little bit wiser, reading up on things. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Do I need an accommodation? No, I just need people to be patient with me at times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so that's a very interesting change that has come about over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's a very interesting question and piece to explore, because personally, for years and years, I, you know, would not have considered stuttering as a disability for similar reasons. Like, there's so many more things out there that people are truly afflicted with or suffering with, and stuttering, like, you know, that's not a big deal. Until I began to realize that I was avoiding phone calls. I was avoiding, you know, situations where I might stutter in front of people that I didn't know, and that I would be like judged, you know,
embarrassed,
you know, right. Or, you know, seen as different, or, you know, and so I did not see it as disability. But when I began to reflect on, well, people who can't or won't make their own calls, or they can't talk to their kids' teacher at school, I mean, those are disabling situations. And so I came to believe, you know, at some point that I have at times been disabled by my stuttering, but not just with the stuttering, with the emotional complexity of stuttering can be
absolutely
deceived, right.
No, and I've experienced so many of those situations talking with my kids' teachers. Obviously, I have twins, so they've been in school for 13 years, and I've been going to the parent teacher conferences every year. And, you know, I think my son's third grade teacher was a stutterer. I never asked her. But I think she was, but she was a great teacher. And I looked up to her like, wow. Like I said, I think she was, but she was great. And I think you also mentioned, like, having to make phone calls. I think something I used to do, and I don't do it anymore, but I used to, like, if I had to make a call, if I thought I was going to stutter, I would, like, go into the other room. I didn't want anyone to hear me, like, in my own home, or if I was at someone's home, or, you know, I'm going to just step into the other room and just make this phone call. Or if I was with someone in a car and I had to call, I was, like, petrified. I'm like, can you call them? My phone's not working, or just some silly thing like that. Like, things we used to do to get Oh, I've done them all over the years.
And it's very real. It's the result. Those are very real fears, I believe, because
absolutely,
of the, you know, because of the fact that stuttering is still so stigmatized. And
I was just going to say, it's such a stigma.
Yeah, like there's so many false assumptions about stuttering that, you know, people don't, you know, don't often even encounter somebody who stutters for, you know, years at a time. So, yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the word accommodation. You know, in some of the work that I do with the NSA, and in particular the NSA program that we have, We Stutter at Work, we have come up with, you know, ways that individuals who stutter in the workplace can be accommodated. You know, like, I never used to think of accommodations in terms of stuttering, but you just brought up an excellent example. You know, going into a different room to make a phone call, you know, that is an accommodation that we can offer to employees who stutter, who might be so freaked out about somebody hearing them stutter. Providing, you know, a quiet room with a door where somebody can make private phone calls is a very easy way to accommodate that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I used to share an office with my boss at a former job a few years back, and our schedules weren't like, I was in early at like at 7:30, and she would come in at like 9. We just kind of worked up. So anytime I had to make a call, I remember this so clearly. I look back now. I would try to make all of those calls early in the morning before she came in. And then, like, if she had to go, you know, if she stepped out of the office for some reason to whatever, I'm like, oh, here's my chance to make a phone call. I did all the stuff, as we say. I did everything, trying to hide, or, you know, I did it all.
Yeah. How many times did you record your voicemail greetings? Right? I would do it like 30 times until I was satisfied.
Oh, that is so funny, Pam. I can't believe you just said that. That just brought back.
Yes. And it's just like, now. Oh.
It, so many times.
I just can't believe that I did that, you know, but I was like petrified that somebody would hear me stutter and judge me as incompetent, you know? So yeah, I'd be like,
well, that or just trying to be fluent when you do it by saying hi, this is Stacy, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Like 20 times until it was perfect.
Perfect. Right. I think I finally reached the point where my perfect was okay with like one or two little blips, you know, like I was okay with that, you know, like by the 30th time, you know, I was okay with that. But like the things that we do.
Oh, my gosh.
And I wonder, you know, since, you know, this podcast is Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, are these efforts that we make, are they more, do women do those things more than men do? Do you think, like, do we feel as women like more apt to be criticized, judged, bullied, shamed? Or do you think it's like the same across the board?
I've never thought about that. And I'll be honest with you, other than people in the NSA who I've met, you know, either, you know, here through this group or through the chapter that I did attend a long time ago, I haven't encountered, outside of those, you know, areas, I haven't encountered a lot of people who stutter. Mm-hmm. Like I said, my son's third grade teacher did, I'm almost positive, but woman, she got up in front of that class every day. I think she was like for 30 years. I mean, give her the credit.
Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know any men who stutter, none that I can think of. Personally, I would think it's more of a stigma for a man. That's just my personal thought, just because men have to give off this, that
right.
I'm
Who
a man and
confident.
That. And I would think men would just be like, oh my gosh, like I stutter, or I blocked on that word, or I said blah, blah, blah in front of, book or, whatever it was. I would think it's men. And since we are a small group, I think I read 1 in 5 stutterers are women. That's correct. So that means that 4 out of the other 4 are men.
Right.
So there's obviously more men out there. I just have never met one, not that I can think of, but hopefully I'll get to this summer.
Absolutely. I really hope that, you're definitely planning on coming and that you're going to be bringing the sea candy.
Seas candy. I told you I would bring Seas candy. And if I come, I will personally bring you some Seas candy. Good memory.
Awesome. Awesome. But the reason that, and we're going to shift into wind down time, but the reason that I just brought that up about, are women more prone to hiding? I think that because it falls to us to make the kids' doctor's appointments, to contact the schools, to, contact the cheerleaders or the sports organizations, that basically falls on us, and
yes, absolutely.
Well, men kind of just get away with only having to deal with like the professional aspects of stuttering, and women, we deal with both.
Yeah, no, you're right. I never even thought about that, I'll be honest. And I have done all of that through my kids' years. Mm-hmm. Called in when they were sick, called in to the doctor and dentist, and they're gonna miss, this or that. It's always us. You're right. So
right.
But I'm sure there are dads out there who do it, and I'm sure there's lots of single dads who have to do it because there's no, mom around, and very interesting. I never even thought about it, but it's been a huge part of my life too. So as a mom,
And that's why, for those of you listening, Stacy has referred to our group. We're talking about the monthly online support group that we have specifically for women who stutter. And, this group, I think, has become like such an important piece in many women's lives, because there isn't that safe space anywhere else for just women who stutter.
Correct.
Given that, four out of five are men, not only are we less likely to encounter, a person who stutters in every day, but it's even less likely that you're going to encounter a woman that stutters. And believe it or not, Stacy, I've had people say to me over the years, well, I knew men stutter. I didn't think there were women that stutter. Like, people that have thought that it was only a male thing, so it's very interesting. And I'm just so happy that we have that space, that sacred space for women who stutter, and you become part of that group. You become part of that community.
I have, and I really enjoy the group. I try to get there, I think it's the third Thursday of every month. I'm, mm-hmm. I always have it on my calendar. If I'm home and I have the time, obviously I want to try to be there. And it's just been really, I love the support that it gives, and everyone is just patient and helpful and, you know, very care, just people are very caring. And it boosts me up every week when I don't encounter others in my own life. Really, I don't, you know, so it's just nice to know that there's others in there who feel how I feel going through what I'm going through. And we have that safe space to just all come together and talk and share. And it's just safe. That's the word that we use. It's like you said, it's just our safe space.
Yeah.
It's great.
So a final question.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you have 17-year-old twins. So
yeah.
Are you going to have them listen to this?
They want to listen to it.
What do you think?
Yeah, they already said, huh?
What do you think they're going to think?
So my kids, you know, I'm mom. That's who I am. I've done all the stuff, all the driving, all the cooking, all the changing of the diapers over the years. I'm just mom. And they've, you know, even though they know I stutter, they've never thought it was a big thing. I've always thought it was more of a big thing than they did because I'm just mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just trying to think of something really quick.
I think they're going to be proud of you.
Huh?
I think they're going to be proud of you.
Oh, I think so too. Like I said, this is not something I would have ever thought I would have done for the obvious reason. However, as we spoke about earlier, this is a safe thing because it's where we can go. And I think they thought it was really cool that I was doing it. They know I stutter. It's not a deal to them at all. They're like, okay, so you blipped on that word, or you blocked on the word, or you did this or that. Okay, so what? Right. So, okay, now let's eat dinner and let's watch the movie. And now let's help me with my homework. You know, I'm just mom. So it's never been a big deal to them. It was always bigger to me. So they've always been very supportive, and it's just never been a thing to them. So they want to listen to it, actually. So I'll be way more critical about me than they will about me. So, I mean, but I think we all are. I think that's just how we all are.
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything you want to add or share before we end? I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story. It was great having you as a guest today. What are your last words?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. This has been great. This has been fun. I was, like I said, you know, nervous a bit, but I think I kind of blew, you know, that out, and we just had a nice chat. I am hoping to go to conference this summer. I'll just say that. I'm already looking into all of the info online. So I think it would be a really neat thing to do, to meet everybody, hear everyone else's stories, and, you know, go to, you know, an even larger, safer space, meeting, you know, more than just our group, but all the people who come to conference, all the, I'm guessing, hundreds of people, if not more, who come, and we, you know, all just knowing it's a safe space for us there. And, you know, so I really hope I can go, and I think it'll be great.
Yeah, I do too. And like, you'll be getting a great big bear hug from me. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I can't wait. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Story.